Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star one and record your information. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn today's meeting over to Tom Skinner. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you all for joining us today for this update on Zika virus. Today, CDC is releasing a couple of sets of interim guidelines on Zika, one pertaining to guidelines for healthcare providers who are caring for pregnant women and women of reproductive age with possible Zika virus exposure, and another set of guidelines for the prevention of sexual transmission of Zika virus. Today we have the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden, who's going to provide some opening remarks, and then he'll answer your questions. Dr. Frieden.
Thanks very much for joining us. Good morning. Today, I'll discuss updated interim guidelines for health providers caring for pregnant women and describe new interim guidelines for the prevention of sexual transmission of Zika virus. But first, I want to step back and reflect. It's been exactly 2 weeks since CDC released our first travel alert notice on Zika virus in the Americas. That was the same week CDC first identified Zika in brain tissue from infants who tragically had died from Zika. I wish we knew more about Zika today. I wish we could do more about Zika today. I understand that this is a stressful situation for women and families, and particularly for women who are pregnant. And what we're doing in our efforts is prioritizing all of the work that we can do to protect pregnant women. Zika-associated microcephaly and other fetal harm are new phenomena. It has been more than 70 years since rubella was identified as a cause of fetal malformations. We're not aware of any prior mosquito-borne disease associated with such a potentially devastating birth outcome on a scale anything like what appears to be occurring with Zika in Brazil. Because this phenomenon is so new, we are quite literally discovering more about it each and every day. With each passing day, the linkage between Zika and microcephaly becomes stronger. In addition, the linkage between Zika and Guillain-Barré syndrome also appears stronger the more we learn. And because it's new and can be so severe, it's scary, especially for women who are pregnant or considering pregnancy and for their families. At CDC, we work 24/7 to protect people from health threats, and we're committed to three key things. First, finding out all we can as fast as we can. Second, being open and transparent about what we know and what we don't know. We tell it like it is. Third, doing all we can to protect people, both with the tools we have today and by working both ourselves and with partners to develop tools for tomorrow. 2 weeks ago, we issued a notice that pregnant women should not travel to areas where Zika virus transmission is ongoing, and that is still the bottom line. In addition, women who are pregnant and are in one of these areas should strictly follow steps to prevent mosquito bites. In fact, everyone living in areas where Zika is spreading should strictly follow steps to prevent mosquito bites. Over the past 2 weeks, CDC and our partners have discovered a lot about Zika, but there's still much more to learn. So far, all but one case of Zika in the United States are either among returning travelers or in the U.S. territories of Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, and American Samoa. The one exception is the case of apparent sexual transmission of Zika reported by Dallas. There's no doubt that over the coming months, many more travelers will return to the U.S. with Zika infection. Some of them will be pregnant women, and already one, a woman in Hawaii, unfortunately, did give birth to an affected infant. We expect that there could be local transmission in some parts of the United States, particularly in areas where the primary mosquito species that spreads Zika is present. We hope and expect that local transmission will not become widespread, but we'll have to change our guidance as we learn. We're working with state and local health departments to prevent local transmission, and we're also working intensively with Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, American Samoa, where local transmission is already occurring. Now let me turn to today's release of interim guidelines. The first of them is an update. We're updating our guidance for healthcare providers who are caring for pregnant women during this ongoing Zika virus transmission time. Testing for Zika virus is improving, and I can say that over the past 2 weeks, we've learned several things. First, the serological test, what's called an IgM test, which tests for acute infection, is performing better than we had hoped. So we have more confidence in this test than we did even 2 weeks ago. It is not perfect. There is no perfect test for Zika. But we need to roll out this test, and that's exactly what we're doing. That's why the new guidance recommends that not only should pregnant women who have had symptoms have testing for Zika virus, but also, to the extent possible, pregnant women without symptoms of Zika virus who did travel to a place where Zika was spreading be offered testing between 2 and 12 weeks after returning from areas with ongoing Zika virus transmission. As in the original guidance, pregnant women with a history of travel who live in Zika endemic areas and who have had Zika-like symptoms should be prioritized for testing for Zika virus. The best way to predict whether Zika virus is present is the presence of Zika-like symptoms in people who may have been exposed to mosquitoes which carry the Zika virus. Women should discuss testing options with their healthcare provider. A full set of our recommendations is on cdc.gov. We also heard from the provider community that serial ultrasounds were very challenging. And so listening to women and their providers, their families, we have adjusted and refined the guidelines, and we are rolling out the availability of serological testing. We wish more tests were available. Our laboratories are literally working around the clock to get test kits out. We're fortunate that we have test kits at all. That's a reflection of many years of work done by scientists in CDC laboratories around the country who have developed this test. And we're in active conversations with many companies to offer them our technology, our materials, so that they can develop these and they can be more widely available. But we're aware that it will be frustrating for some period of time. Not everyone who wants to get a test will be able to get it, and we're working as fast as we can to increase the availability of testing. Next, I'll discuss CDC's interim guidelines for the prevention of sexual transmission of Zika virus. Earlier this week, a Dallas County Health Department investigation revealed that a person who recently traveled to an area with Zika virus returned to the U.S. and developed Zika-like symptoms. That person later tested positive for Zika. Subsequently, their sexual partner, who by report had not traveled, also developed Zika-like symptoms. Both of their infections with Zika virus were confirmed in the CDC laboratory. Zika virus continues to be spread primarily through the bite of an infected mosquito, but we know that it can, on occasion, be spread by sexual contact. We're also aware of rare examples of transmission through blood transfusion. Because it's possible that it can be transmitted through sex, and because our primary concern and priority here is the protection of pregnant women, we're recommending the following. Men with a pregnant sex partner, men who either live in or have traveled to an area of active Zika virus transmission and who have a pregnant sex partner should either consistently and correctly use condoms during sex or abstain from sexual activity for the duration of pregnancy. Consistent and correct use of latex condoms reduces the risk of sexual transmission of many infections. It's also worth remembering that Zika virus illness is usually mild. Approximately 4 out of 5 people who are infected never know they have it. They don't appear to have symptoms. When symptoms do occur, they generally last a few days or at most a week. It's also very important to remember that the risk of Zika infection depends on how long and how much a person has been exposed to mosquitoes and the steps they've taken to prevent mosquito bites while in an affected area and how much Zika was spreading in that area. I'll close today's briefing by talking for a moment about where we go from here. Unfortunately, in places that have had a lot of the dengue virus, including Puerto Rico, there could be many cases of Zika infection, including some in women who are pregnant. Whether and how many microcephaly cases there may be is not possible to know at this time. There will continue to be many travelers with Zika coming back to the U.S., and some of these may be pregnant. That's why our bottom line, again, is that women who are pregnant should not travel to areas that have Zika virus. Finally, Zika reminds us that over and over, nature is a formidable enemy. That's why we have to invest in laboratories, disease detectives, tracking systems, mosquito surveillance and control programs in the U.S. and around the world. Again, we wish we knew more. We wish we could do more. We know that this is anxiety-provoking for women who are pregnant and their families. But there is something everyone can do. Pregnant women can take steps to protect themselves, either by not traveling to an area with Zika infection spreading, or if they're in such an area, by rigorously using mosquito protection. That means repellent, clothing with repellent in it, long sleeves, long pants, if possible, air conditioning, or at least screens. Men who have traveled to areas where Zika is spreading and who have pregnant sexual partners should use a condom or abstain. Communities where Zika is spreading can reduce breeding sites by removing standing water, and states, localities, territories can implement effective mosquito control programs to kill mosquito larvae and to control mosquito populations. We at the federal government are working around the clock across the federal government to respond with the tools we have today while we try to optimize those and establish tools for tomorrow. Thank you very much, and I'll take questions now.
Carolyn, we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Make sure your phone is unmuted and record your information. To withdraw that request, you may press star 2. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question only. Please stand by for our first question. Our first question or comment is from Helen Branswell from Stat News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my question. Dr. Frieden, I know you mentioned that things are evolving pretty rapidly. Today, Fiocruz scientists announced that they had found active virus, so I presume that means viral isolates in saliva and urine. Is that something you think that the CDC is going to have to address going forward in the sexual transmission prevention guidance?
We're still learning more about Zika virus and how it works in the body. Right now, there are a total of 3 cases in the world literature of Zika virus being present in male genitourinary secretions. And as we learn more, we will adapt. I think it's important, though, to step back and emphasize that Zika is a mosquito-borne virus, and the overwhelming majority of cases are spread by mosquitoes. There are unknowns. We don't know how long the Zika virus may persist in semen, and studies to look at that are underway, but it will be weeks to months before we know more. What we always try to do is give people what we know when we know it so you can decide based on the best available information.
Could I ask a follow-up, please?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I see from the guidance and hear from what you've said that the highest priority is being placed on preventing transmission to women who are pregnant. The guidance doesn't say anything about men who have sex with men. Is there a message for them from the CDC on preventing Zika transmission?
You know, our priority here is to prevent a pregnant woman from becoming infected with Zika. And for that reason, spread by other routes or among other populations is of much less concern because, again, 4 out of 5 Zika infections are asymptomatic, according to what we know so far, and those that are symptomatic are generally mild. The real problem here is the effect on the developing brain of the fetus. That is what has to be the priority for protection.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is from Caleb Hellerman from CBS NewsHour. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you. I was curious, there was the report yesterday about from the AP elucidating some of the problems with sharing samples from here in Brazil, probably because of the Brazilian laws. I'm wondering if has that slowed down this sort of rush or this fast scientific inquiry in any way? I mean, you know, how are you dealing with that restriction, and is it making any kind of impact on the speed with which you're trying to get answers to some of these questions?
That has not been our experience at all. We have found the Brazilian government and the Brazilian scientists to be open, collaborative, transparent, and excellent partners. We, in fact, have had a team in Brazil working side by side with Brazilians doing studies on Guillain-Barré syndrome. We have another team going down next week. We have specimens from the Brazilians in our laboratories. When I said at the outset that we had identified Zika virus in brain tissue of affected infants, that was a Brazilian specimen that had been sent to the U.S. So I understand that the media have written about this, but that is not the reality that we have right now. There are challenges with specimen sharing. They need to be worked out. Those are issues that have gone on for many years, but they have not undermined our response at this point. We already have positive samples from Puerto Rico in the U.S. that we're able to grow in our own laboratories. As we work to develop better diagnostic tests, we do that in collaboration with other countries, and we make sure that each country does it consistent with its own laws and regulations. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from Maggie Fox from NBC News. Your line is open.
Thanks very much, and I'll have a follow-up as well. But Dr. Frieden, how do we know for sure that mosquitoes are the main route of transmission? And the reason I ask this is that most people who are infected with any mosquito-borne virus are living in close proximity with other people. In the case in Dallas, I'm wondering if there's any line of inquiry to make sure that the person who transmitted the virus, that the semen was tested and perhaps even the saliva, just to answer the questions, not to raise the question of a whole new route of transmission, but just to be sure that we know it was sexual transmission and that we know a bit more about assumptions that are made about what the vector is.
Thank you. Of course, we keep an open mind, but let's just go back to the basics here about Zika and mosquitoes. The Aedes aegypti mosquito is an aggressive mosquito. It bites 4 or 5 people at one blood meal. It bites relatively painlessly, so you don't swat it and kill it. It is ideally suited to the crowded urban environment, where there is standing water that can be as small as a drop of water in a bottle cap where it can breed, and where it is challenging to get rid of or avoid because it bites all day long, not just at dawn and dusk. So everything that we've seen about not just Zika, but dengue and chikungunya spread by the same mosquito suggests that this is the overwhelming cause and route of transmission. But anytime there are lots of cases of a condition, you will see rare or occasional phenomena happening sometimes. And we think that is what's happening here. As I indicated at the outset, we will be doing studies of how long the virus can persist in semen. It goes away from the blood within about a week. So we wouldn't be surprised to see, for example, occasional transfusion-associated cases if someone gave blood when the virus was in their blood. And that's why on February 1st, the American Association of Blood Banks issued the guidance to defer blood donation for all individuals who had traveled to an area with Zika transmission for 28 days. That leaves a margin of safety for blood transfusion. And because we don't know how long Zika is spread in semen, and because our concern is for that great vulnerability of the developing fetus, that's why we're saying that for men who may be infected, may have been infected, whose partner is pregnant, they should wear a condom or abstain until the termination, until the completion of the pregnancy. Pregnancy comes to term.
My follow-up was the semen of the person involved in Dallas, Texas, tested? And if it wasn't, why didn't the Dallas County Health Department do that?
That investigation is still active and ongoing, and we're collaborating with the Dallas County Health Department on that. And as soon as more information is available, we'll make that public.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question is from Mike Stope from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. Just a couple. First of all, in the Dallas case, was that male transmission to female? And also, just so it's crystal clear, the guidance today on sexual transmission does not speak to kissing, and it does not speak to male-to-male transmission. Is that correct? And I have a follow-up.
In terms of your second question, we're specifically looking at all forms of insertive sex, including oral, anal, and vaginal, from men who may have had Zika to women who are pregnant. In terms of the Dallas case, we've released the details of those that we're going to release.
Okay, and my follow-up, thank you. Doctor, you said during your prepared comments that something about with each passing day, the more we learn, the linkage between Zika and microcephaly becomes stronger. But we haven't had reported cases outside of Brazil of a Zika microcephaly link. Is that correct? Could you say a little bit more about what you're learning with each passing day that's helping you solidify in your mind this link?
Well, in fact, there is a case of microcephaly in Hawaii that we also mentioned 2 weeks ago, all on the same day when we issued the response. That woman had been in Brazil early in her pregnancy, delivered an infant with microcephaly in Hawaii. So we have seen cases outside of Brazil. We also have looked at the time course of Zika infection in different countries, and we don't actually expect to see infants born yet in other countries. That's why we're concerned that if the link is there, and again, we're not certain, and there may be cofactors. There's still a lot that we don't know about Zika, but the association is looking stronger and stronger, and we're not surprised not to see cases of microcephaly in other countries because of the time frame between infection and delivery.
Next question, Carolyn.
Our next question is from Kat Long from the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Do you concur with the Brazil health officials advising pregnant women to avoid exposure to saliva and urine even before there's definitive proof that Zika can be transmitted that way? And I also have a follow-up.
Sorry, I was on mute. What we do in public health is to provide the best available information so that women can decide for themselves what they want to do. We know that semen may have large quantities of viable virus for at least a short period of time after Zika virus infection. The data on saliva and on urine is less clear, but what we would do is provide that information and allow people to make their own choices.
And how likely do you think it is that Zika can be transmitted through saliva or urine?
We just have no data to inform that, and we try to stick to the science here at CDC, and the science says that we know that viruses can be transmitted through sex relatively efficiently. That's why there are so many sexually transmitted infections in the U.S. and around the world. And although other modes of transmission may occur, they tend to be much less common.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question is from Dan Childs from ABC News. Your line is open.
Thank you very much for taking my question. When will we know whether there's a key risk window during pregnancy when it comes to the possible connection between Zika and microcephaly? And I have one follow-up question.
Well, if Zika behaves as many other infectious and other toxic causes of fetal malformations, the first trimester and early part of the second trimester would be the highest risk time. However, if Zika has, as we fear, what's called a neurotropism, where it's targeting the developing brain, then adverse consequences could occur at any time in pregnancy. And that's why our advice is specifically that regardless of the trimester of pregnancy, women who are pregnant should not travel to areas with Zika spreading, and for women living in areas where Zika is spreading, they should protect themselves against mosquitoes for the duration of pregnancy.
Thank you. And the follow-up question is, are we getting any better at knowing whether there's actually a spectrum of developmental consequences, i.e. less severe developmental consequences than microcephaly that may be occurring but perhaps are less visible?
This is one of the key questions that we'll be investigating in the coming days, weeks, and months, because either possibility is there. On the one hand, it may be that many of the children who don't have obvious microcephaly have significant health effects. On the other hand, it may be that if there isn't microcephaly, the children will have normal neural development. We just don't know at this point, and that's why we're always going to err on the side of safety.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sandy Lamont from CNN. Your line is open.
Thank you so much for taking my question. You indicated that there are tests going on in Brazil to test the semen of individuals. Can you give us more specifics on that? Is that at the epicenter? Is that with the husbands of the women who have given birth to babies with microcephaly? What exactly is being tested?
Really, the studies of viral persistence in semen will occur in many parts of the world, including in parts of the U.S. with travelers who have come back, in Puerto Rico, where we have some sites where we've been monitoring other viral diseases for some time. But these are going to take time, and they're not simple. There are essentially two ways to test for virus in semen. One of them is with what's called a real-time PCR, or polymerase chain reaction. That's a very sensitive test. So that will be positive even when the individual is not infectious, because it will measure or find even tiny parts of the virus, even if the virus is dead, non-viable. The other test is what's called a culture, or growing the virus, and though that's more specific, it's much less sensitive, and it may miss some people who are infectious, but the virus doesn't grow. So these are studies that will take weeks to months to come up with reliable information, and they're underway.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is from Rob Stein from National Public Radio. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my questions. I was just hoping you could talk a little bit more about this report out today about the active virus being found in saliva and urine. How worried should people be about that? And, I mean, should, for example, pregnant women not kiss men who have traveled or partners that have traveled to areas where Zika is present? I was hoping you could give some guidance about how, what, you know, what this report means and how worried people should be about it and what, if any, precautions they should take as a result.
We take all reports seriously. We would need more information about that report, including the methodology of it. But I think we have to go back to the bottom line here. The bottom line here is this is a mosquito-borne disease, and that means in areas where Zika is spreading, women should protect themselves against mosquitoes, and for women who are pregnant, they shouldn't travel to an area where Zika is spreading. The new guidelines we've issued this morning have to do with all forms of insertive sex between men who may have Zika and pregnant partners.
Does that include kissing, then?
No. We have not issued guidance on that.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is from Maren McKenna from National Geographic. Your line is open.
Thanks so much for taking my question. Dr. Frieden, you said that the CDC expects limited local transmission of Zika in the United States. Is there anything you can say at this point about the robustness of state and local mosquito control programs?
Mosquito control in the U.S. is often done by what are called mosquito abatement or control districts, and they're quite variable. Some of them do an absolutely superb job, some of them less so. And that's why it's so important that we invest in the systems to track and find mosquitoes. This is not easy work, although the mosquitoes that spread Zika are different from the mosquitoes that spread West Nile, having worked on that for many years, the different aspects of mosquito control can be quite complex, labor-intensive, and really, when it comes to both Zika in general and mosquito control specifically, it is not easy and it is not quick. For mosquito control, you need to have monitoring of both mosquito larvae and adult mosquitoes. That's a labor-intensive, technically complex undertaking. And then you need to control mosquito larvae and adult mosquitoes, and that is a labor-intensive and challenging area. And we know from the experience with dengue that you have to get to very high levels of mosquito control to drive down the risk of dengue in a community.
My follow-up question is that this sounds like something you're concerned about.
Yes, I think Zika is concerning because of the threat to pregnant women and the developing fetus, and because there is such an important need for us to both learn more and do more in the U.S., in Puerto Rico, and the other territories of the U.S., which have had lots of dengue cases in the past, and that's a marker for the risk of Zika, and around the world, so that we can learn more and partner to address Zika as effectively as possible.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is from Lisa Schneering from SIDRAP News. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. Just a real quick question here. You said that there have been 35 imported cases in the United States, and then you have some in the territories. I'm wondering if there's been any Guillain-Barré syndrome cases in any of those that people have picked up. Thanks so much.
Yes. So let me just clarify a bit about the reporting of Zika cases. We have worked with what's called CSTE, the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists. Zika is a reportable disease throughout all of the U.S. and the territories. We will be updating on our website, as we did today, the number of officially reported cases. That stands at 35 travel-associated cases of Zika within the U.S. states, as well as locally acquired cases in Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands. We have heard reports by today of 51 cases in the continental U.S., 50 of them from travel, and one of them in Dallas from apparent sexual transmission. We've heard of 21 cases in Puerto Rico, 20 locally acquired, and one from travel elsewhere. Among all of those cases, there have been 6 pregnant women, 1 affected child, and 1 individual with Guillain-Barré syndrome. Now, I have to say on Guillain-Barré, it's very challenging to make the causal link in an individual case. So there is a fair amount of Guillain-Barré in the U.S. It can follow a diarrheal illness with a bacteria called Campylobacter. It can follow influenza infection. It can follow a range of other infections. And so in any individual case, it can be difficult to say it's associated, but there does appear to be one case. And as we look at numbers going forward, we'll be looking particularly not just at the number of cases, because we do expect there to be many more travel-associated cases in the weeks to months to come, because there's a lot of travel to places with Zika spreading, but we'll be looking particularly at the number of pregnant women, the number of affected children, and also the number of individuals with Guillain-Barré.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is from Lena Sun from Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. Can you, just to follow up on that information, is there any kind of monitoring or additional surveillance that you are doing for these 6 pregnant women and the 1 case with Guillain-Barré syndrome? And is there any more you can share or elaborate about those cases?
Because of issues of medical confidentiality, I can't go into any details. We are working very closely with the patients and their physicians, and it's obviously a very challenging situation for them, and we respect their privacy.
I have a follow-up. It's more about the science. How significant do you think it is that the Brazilians were able to find antibodies in the spinal fluids of those babies with microcephaly?
Again, we have not seen the details of which tests were done. We've actually worked with the Brazilians collaboratively, and in fact, they are one of 14 countries which we have provided training and materials to so that they can do the test that was developed in the CDC laboratory. That information is certainly of interest and is one of the things which, if confirmed, would increase our level of suspicion, really, that the association between Zika and microcephaly is causal.
Next question, Carolyn.
Thank you. Our next question is from Carrie Sheridan from AFP. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks for taking my question. Dr. Frieden, I was wondering if I could ask you to follow up a bit on a point you made earlier about other cases of microcephaly outside of Brazil, that you weren't surprised not to see them because of the time frame between infection and delivery. And I was wondering, I would imagine that health officials are anticipating cases in other areas. Can you say anything more about when those cases might start to arise?
Our scientists are looking at that, and though we don't have a crystal ball, we do have some of the best scientists and modelers and laboratory experts in the world, it will depend on a series of unknowns. The first is how much Zika was there, and that's hard to know. The second is how likely is it that an infection with Zika in pregnancy at different stages, symptomatic or not, resulted in an infected infant. And we just don't know that. So there are lots of unknowns here. That's why we have teams on the ground now and heading out today, tomorrow, and next week to different places to partner with countries around the continent so that we can learn more in Latin America and the Caribbean and elsewhere.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Our next question is from Nicholas St. Fleur from New York Times. Your line is open.
Hi there, and thank you for taking my question. So my question is looking at the CDC's advice. Does the CDC have any advice for women who are currently not pregnant but are thinking about becoming pregnant, who have sexual partners, male partners, who have been to one of these affected areas? What is your advice to them to prevent sexual transmission?
I think the key there is to talk with your doctor. We encourage women to discuss this with their doctor and with their sexual partner, and to remember that the risk of Zika infection depends on how long someone was in a Zika-affected area, how much Zika there was at the time, how many mosquito bites the person got, how well they protected themselves against mosquito bites. We wish we had a perfect test to determine if someone was potentially infectious, but we don't have that today. And with the limited test capacity that we're rolling out, we're prioritizing women who are pregnant. It may be that in several weeks or several months, we have a much more widely available, much more accurate test, and we are working around the clock ourselves and with a number of companies to try to make that available to people. But it's not available today.
Okay, Carolyn, we'll take two more questions.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is from Julie Steenhuisen from Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the protocols for the studies that you're going to be running in Brazil to, you know, sort of make that causal link between Zika and microcephaly.
So one of the key methodologies here is what's called a case-control study, where we identify infants who definitively have microcephaly, and we identify controls who definitively don't have microcephaly, and then we compare both their characteristics of the mothers, the infants, the environment, and most importantly, we get laboratory tests. There are really three classes of tests here. One tests for active infection, and that looks for the actual virus itself with PCR. A second looks for the body's reaction to infection, looking at both IgG and IgM antibodies. And the third looks at what's called a plaque reduction neutralization assay, PRNT, which looks at whether it's likely to be from that particular virus. None of these tests are perfect, and there is some cross-reactivity of the latter two with dengue and chikungunya, which may be common in these areas. So these studies will take weeks to months to complete, but we will continue to keep people updated on our progress as we move forward.
Okay, and also, given the, you know, concerns, are you going to be soon adding any other countries to the travel restrictions?
As every time there is Zika reported and confirmed in a country, we add it to the travel advisory. The best way to look at that is to look on our website.
Carolyn, we'll take one last question, please.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Lynn Peterson from Trends in Medicine. Your line is open.
Thank you. The question is, if it's in semen, then and someone gets pregnant from that semen, is that fetus, that newly formed fetus, therefore at risk?
We have no information on that. This is a new phenomenon that there's a lot that we still don't know about.
So doesn't that mean that men should be tested and that people are basically at risk, fetuses are at risk that get created?
You're asking questions that we don't have scientific answers to. What we do know is that for many different virus infections and other toxins or things that cause problems in pregnancy, the highest risk is in the first trimester. We also don't know, for example, the likelihood that there would be transmission in the way that you're outlining. But the key here, I'd like to just close by reminding people of four key things. First, the bottom line for most people in the U.S. is that pregnant women should postpone travel to Zika-affected areas. Second, our new guidance is that pregnant women should use protection during sex with condoms or abstain if their partner has traveled to an area where Zika is spreading. Third, that pregnant women who themselves traveled to an area where Zika has been spreading should be tested for the virus between 2 and 12 weeks after return. And finally, that this is a new phenomenon. It has been more than 50 years since a viral cause of a significant birth abnormality has been identified. We're learning more about it every day. We wish we knew more, we wish we could do more, and we understand that pregnant women and their families are anxious. That's why we emphasize that there is something that everyone can do. Pregnant women can defer travel, or if they're in a Zika-affected area, can rigorously prevent mosquito bites. Communities can reduce mosquito populations by mosquito control and invest in effective mosquito control. We at CDC and throughout the federal government are working 24/7 to scale up testing for Zika, track the virus, implement the best ways we have to protect people today while we figure out better ways to kill mosquitoes and encourage people to make informed decisions by providing all of the information that we know when we know it. The situation is evolving rapidly, and as we learn more, we'll share more so that Americans can decide how best to protect their own health. Thank you very much.
Carolyn, this concludes our telebriefing. A transcript of this call will be posted to the CDC newsroom as soon as possible. If reporters need additional information or have other questions, they can call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286 or email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.
That concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.